Okay, so steps 8 and 9, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. These can be complicated steps, and I'm hoping that some of you will have experience, strength, and hope to share, because I only have the part that I've done, the work that I've done, the experiences I've had. 8, for me, was relatively easy. It started with me and went from there. And it was almost everyone and everything listed on my fourth step inventory, if not everyone and everything. 800 number people. They were on the list of people I owed amends to. And you can't find them. So it was like, oh, darn. I get to make a living amends to that one, because anybody who's read any of the materials on step 8, you can't always make direct amends to people. You can't find them. Maybe they've died. Maybe, I mean, Facebook is enormously helpful for finding people and the internet generally, but sometimes you cannot find people. And you don't know who they are, like these 4-800 number people. There's no way I could ever have located any of them. Never even got much more than a first name if I got that. Maybe I got an employee number and jotted it down because I knew I'd need it. There's no way for me to make amends directly to those people, but I can make a living amends going forward on how I treat that class of people, that whole group of people, everyone who works at an 800 number or any variation of an 800 number. I did want to mention something that Jody mentioned twice now, and it just makes me chuckle. My ex-husband coined a word based on my behavior, because I've heard you say twice now, I would present myself in such a way people would react and then I would feel victimized and I would, but I provoked it. And my husband calls that pretaliation. I retaliate in advance. And if I had a lie detector test, I would pass that it was defensive. But all of you would pass that it was offensive. Because I would come into the room ready for battle before you even knew there was a battle coming. Probably as soon as you saw me, you knew there was a battle coming. You might have run, might have stepped behind someone else, but it was pretty clear. And I was just ready to deal with your crap that you were going to throw at me. I already knew you were going to throw it at me. And sure as shoot, you did. Every single time, mostly because you were trying to get the bear to walk out of the room. Like, I'm going to throw things at her and maybe she'll go away. And so I provoked all of those interactions. Every single one of them, by pre-taliating. Yeah, Jody?
But it's like too.
It definitely can be that reaction to childhood trauma that I'm not going to go there again. I'm ready now. Full-on armor, energy's going. I'm going to zap you. And it works.
Smite.
Yes, thank you. Smite.
My attention was smite.
Smite. List. And the number one question that I run into on forming the list is, do I belong on the list? And my answer is always yes. If nothing else, if you are overweight, you owe yourself amends to modify your eating. That's my way of looking at it. If you're underweight, you owe yourself the amends of modifying your eating. Love this body enough to treat it well. It has served me incredibly well for a long time. There are many different spiritual tools available that I have picked up over the years, which is really more of an 11th step topic, but that have enabled me to actually fall in love with my physical self before I lost weight and allow weight loss. So I encourage you to look for those tools and talk to each other and develop those so that you can do at least that part. And almost for sure, we have given ourselves away in some way. And part of our amends to ourselves will be to find ways to set boundaries that are functional. They may not be nice, they may not be gentle, but they need to be functional. My personal take on it is nice and gentle will happen as I get better at it. Right now, the most important part is that I do it. That I set boundaries for myself. And in fact, I was right. Over time, I did get better at it, and I was able to be more gentle about how I presented the boundary that I was presenting, and I became more able to predict, for lack of a better word, how you might receive the boundary that I'm setting, and therefore I could change just a little bit maybe how I languaged the boundary I was setting, or how I began the conversation about the boundary I was setting. For example, if I don't want you to come over to my house unannounced, I could say, I don't want you to come over to my house unannounced. And you might be offended by that. And that would be your choice. I'm not responsible for how you respond. I could say, I absolutely adore spending time with you, and when you come over to my house unexpectedly, I'm usually distracted and I don't want to spend distracted time with you. I want to spend one-on-one heart time with you. So let's plan these things in advance. Ta-da! I don't owe amends for how I did it. You're going to take it however you're going to take it. You can choose to be offended by that or not. Either way, whether I just don't come over to my house unannounced, that's a fair statement. I don't owe amends for that. It'd probably be better if I said, I would prefer if you not. The one thing I have learned is if I put more words in what I'm trying to say, it comes across more softly. It's like, yeah, go get me this, might produce a hard feeling on your side. Would you mind if I imposed on you to go get this for me? It is far less likely to have us run into friction with each other. So I need to be a little responsible for how I do what I do, but it's most important that I do it. How I do it, I can learn later. I need to do it for me first. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I cannot think of a situation in which I personally have dealt with something that might injure them or others. For me, step 9, probably the deepest work I've done on step 9, was not amends, but they go hand in hand, and that is forgiveness. If I am hooked to someone and I have scoured that relationship for what my part is and my part isn't, my example is I was in seventh grade. I developed early, so I had breasts when nobody else did. A boy in my biology class turned around and exposed himself to me in class right before the teacher walked in. And immediately after class, I went downstairs and tried to talk to the dean of girls at our high school, our middle school, and she was out, so I got stuck with the dean of boys, who was a man, and who, while I talked to him, and he asked me all these questions, and I now know what I was describing was an erection, but I had no idea in seventh grade what I was talking about, and he's asking me all these detailed questions. Now I'm looking back and I'm going, that was weird. That was really weird. And it felt weird. But I didn't know enough to know anything. And so then, as I walk out of his office, there's the boy waiting to go in. And I was like, you just condemned me to death. This kid's going to kill me. He doesn't have a question in his mind who went and told the dean of boys. So I went to my class, and I came back to the dean of boys and said, you just killed me. This kid's going to kill me. He said, oh, don't worry about it. Kids like that don't have friends. I was like, okay, again, what do I know? I'm in seventh grade. This is an adult telling me. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not how it feels. And so the next day at lunch, this very hard girl came up and said, are you you? And I said, yes, and bam, she hit me, and down I went, and we had this big fight, and it was awful. She's kicking me. I'm on the ground. I mean, it was awful. She was a really hard girl. And I scraped myself up and went back to the dean of boys and said, well, you were wrong. He had a friend. And she's yelling at me. This is what you did to my boyfriend. While she's kicking me. So I went back to the dean of boys and said, I am a bloody mess. The boy had friends. And he said, well, what was her name? I'm like, really? You really want me to trust you with that? Really? And so I told him, because I'm in seventh grade and I don't know better. And I don't know exactly, I don't remember what happened with her. I didn't get beat up again. And my parents came to the school and had meetings about the boy, and the school kept saying, this boy has a horrific home life. Horrific. He needs to be in school. And my parents were like, yep, he does. Any school but this one. And the school's like, well, you know, he really needs to be in school, and we can bus him to this school, and he really, really needs to be in school. It's the only place he gets food. It's the only place he's safe. My parents said, that's great. Any school but this one. And the school transferred him to a different school, school district. So I never saw him again. And I had this resentment towards this dean of boys. Okay, so God has a sense of humor. 20 years later, he buys a cabin next to my dad's cabin. And I get to hear about Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. I'm like, isn't that the dean of boys who kind of like murdered me in seventh grade? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Well, he's got really nasty cancer and he's dying slowly. I'm thinking, well, he better make amends quickly because he's going to run out of time. So I'm like, huh, you know, time's ticking. I'm like, does he know my number? I mean, he could ask you for it, right? I mean, it would be okay with me if you shared it with him, Dad. And Dad's like, I don't know why he would want your number. I'm like, really? I mean, he desperately needs my number because I am pissed. And he owes me massive amends. And the more I looked at it, the more I was like, I was in seventh grade. I hadn't a clue. And even now, looking at it, I'm like, I don't see much that I did that was my part. And I have this nasty resentment that I'm walking around with that I don't think about most of the time, but when I think about my dad mentioning him, I'm like, ooh. And I thought, oh, how can you, I mean, I don't owe amends. How can I get unhooked? Forgiveness. That was the only way to unhook myself from this man. And I just sat down and wrote him a forgiveness letter and burned it. These are the things that you did that I'm sure you did not intend to do, that you probably don't remember, that may not even have stood out as unusual for you. And these are the impacts on me. And I forgive you. I don't forget. I'm not going to go trust you with secrets in my life. I respect what I now understand are your limitations, at least as applied to me in this situation. And I'm not going to trip down that little path again. But I forgive you. And I let you go. And I was able to do that before he died of his cancer. He never did make amends. But I got unhooked. And that was, for me, the point of step 9, is getting unhooked. So that's one step 9 story for me. Another one, and this one's really hard for me. I had, until April, 2 step 9 amends that I knew about way back then. The first time I did step 8, these people were on my list. And I kept telling my sponsor, I'm going to do it in person. I'm going to do it in person. These are my two little sisters. I'm going to do it in person. I don't need to call them and tell them. And then I would see them, and we'd get busy, and we'd get distracted, and we'd go shopping, and then I'd be home, and I'd be like, oh, I forgot again. For years. So we were in Ireland on a rock fort, and it dawned on me. I've been in Ireland for 4 or 5 days now, and I haven't made amends to either one of them. And I'm standing next to one of them. I don't want to talk about this. We had a game. I was 3 years older than she was, maybe 3 and a half. And we had a game. This is, for me, it touches on that sexuality issue, which is just is amplified in my life. So we had a game that I called Fonzie. And I was Fonzie and she was the girl. And my dad had a tire company, and we had these huge boxes that had tires in them. And once, you know, you had them aired out long enough, they didn't stink too bad. You could put a couch cushion in the bottom, and you could climb in there, and it would be like a fort. So we had these massive cardboard forts at our house. And Diana and I were in there, and we were playing Fonzie, which didn't mean anything. We were like playing Fonzie, but it didn't even involve touching each other. But it was like this naughty thing to do. Because you guys all know Fonzie from Happy Days, right? He's always having sex with new people. And so here we were playing Fonzie, which again didn't involve anything other than thinking about having sex with somebody. But I felt so much guilt about it. It was like this super amplified. And so I said to her, I need to talk to you about an amends I owe you. She said, I don't want to talk about it. I said, well, I kind of need to. Can you just listen? She said, all right. And I began to describe the box and the... She said, I don't want to talk about it. I said, I really owe you an amends for this. She said, no, actually, I think we just have inappropriate guilt about things that involve sex from our childhood. That's just something I think that we have. Because she said, as soon as you started talking about it, I got overwhelmed with guilt. I said, oh, really? That's yucky. She said, yeah. I said, I do too. She said, that's yucky. I said, yeah. Huh. And it was like we untied that knot. We let each other off the hook. And it was beautiful. And I owe my other sister amends still. I'm like, oh my gosh, Teresa, you lead retreat. This sucks. But when we were little, I was probably in sixth or seventh grade, she made me mad. You know the song, The Victim Here? She made me mad. She actually had the ability to provoke people like hardly anybody I've ever met. She's a little bit like my younger son. She can just push the edge just enough to make you react and then you're in trouble. That's what she did. And so I don't remember what she did, but I punched her in the stomach. And I knocked the wind out of her. And her eyes turned glassy and she fell on the ground. And she eventually was able to breathe again. But I thought I killed her. And I've never apologized for it. I am not willing to do it. So here's how you don't do the 9 steps. And, you know, I keep thinking, I decently have my phone here. I could call her on my break and get this over with. I might have to do that. Because it's just like, it doesn't eat me alive, but every time I still remember the look on her face. She looked shocked, and then her eyes got glassy, and then she fell. And I thought, oh my God, I killed her. And my next thought doubtlessly was, she deserved it. I'm sick and tired of her provoking me this way. And if I'm going to get in trouble because I almost killed her, I might as well kill her. And that's probably where I still am. And she hasn't done that to me in years and years and years and years. We are really good friends. And here I am telling you, this is not how you do the 9 steps. This is Trish's humanity. Not my favorite part of myself. But reality is, with all the steps, it's a process. I have one that I have not done. I've made all the amends I need to with my ex-husband. I did it as I went along. Part of it was getting us into marriage counseling when I knew I was not committed to the marriage the way I wanted to be. Part of it was communicating with him effectively over the last year. It amazes me. When I walk into the room with him, I don't have any weird energy toward him at all. I don't have any weird feelings about it. I like him. He's a nice guy. I wish him the very, very best. I know he did everything he could to make our marriage work, and so did I. And it didn't. And I've let him go. I even have compassion when I watch his face change when I walk into a room, because it hurts him. That hurts me, that it hurts him. And I trust that over time that will be easier for him. Or he'll put boundaries up, like I can't use his conference room anymore. Right now he's wanting me to use his conference room. So I see him really regularly. So that is the 9th step in action, just as we go along. I clean it up as we go along, which is 10th step. We'll deal with that after lunch. But I do want to open the floor to talk about. So it is now just afternoon, so I wanted to be mindful of time. I did want to share 2 things fairly briefly. One, I have an older sister, and I was her punching bag. I was her outlet for the frustration that she encountered in life. And when I looked at that relationship more closely, I saw my part. I made her life much more difficult by constantly standing behind her. If there was shit coming, sorry. I did it! I swore! I said I wouldn't! Oh. If there was flack coming at her, usually from my dad, but from anyone, I stood behind her. Whatever she did, I didn't do. Whatever she didn't do, I did. I learned from her mistakes all the time at her expense. I meticulously stayed behind her, except two occasions. And both of them I ended up getting slapped across the face, literally, by my dad, with such force that you could see the creases in his finger on my face, of his fingers on my face. But both times he was going at her, and I decided, this isn't going to go well. He didn't ever hit her that I can remember. But if I injected myself into something that was heating up, unexpectedly, he didn't know how to deal with both of us, and he'd hit me. And twice I did it intentionally to diffuse a situation. Threw myself in front of that bus to try to help her. And that was a little amends, as a little, you know, I was probably a preteen teenager. But when I had to make amends to her, my amends was, I am so sorry that I hung you out to dry all the time. I didn't set her up the way my little sister set me up, but I stood behind her and used her as a shield. And she started crying and said, I used to hold you down and do the spit game. I said, I know. I said, but think about the pressure you were under. I mean, you were the only target at our house. And I made sure, other than those two occasions, that I was never a target. She's like, it changed our relationship fundamentally. Because she was able to immediately own her part. But I could see mine. I mean, I really did. I used her as a shield. So that's one story of amends. Another piece that many of us have alluded to, but nobody actually said, and I think is really important to say, don't do amends without a sponsor. Get a sponsor before you make that phone call, before you send that letter. Talk to your sponsor. Show your sponsor what you're doing. No matter how good it is, even if your spouse approves of it, call your sponsor and go over it before you make that contact. Please. My best thinking got me into these rooms. This is not something I do alone, even after years of practice. Do this with a sponsor, especially one who knows you well. So that's all I want to say about step 9 and 8 and 9.